This is Charlottesville Tomorrow, an advocate for our future today. Charlottesville Tomorrow is a nonpartisan community organization working on land use, transportation, and community design issues. Visit us on the web at seavilletomorrow.org.
We're here to talk about where we're going as a city.
On March 10th, 2007, outgoing City Councilor Kevin Lynch served as one of the co-moderators of a Democratic Candidates Forum for the three council seats up for election in November. Lynch and fellow co-moderator Kendra Hamilton declined to seek re-election. The forum was split into two events. First, the audience was broken up into five groups, each of which gathered around a table in the cafeteria at Walker Upper Elementary School. The five candidates spent 15 minutes at each table, engaging in a little bit of retail politics. One participant described the process as a little like speed dating. Charlottesville Tomorrow captured some of the conversations and bring you an edited portion of what some of the participants had to say about growth and development issues. We begin with Jennifer McKeever, an attorney and community activist who sits on the Community Development Block Grant Task Force and on the Parks and Recreation Board.
I'm Jennifer McKeever.
Hi.
I'm running for City Council.
It's a shitty market.
Is that what brings you here?
One of many things. But what is going to happen to it? Because I've heard one alternative is for it to go back to the Carver. I mean, the Jefferson School. And it's too small over there. Yeah, it can't stay where it is because it's going to have a building put up on it. And I'm wondering, what are some of the alternatives? So one of them I've heard of has been the parking lot of the county office building on Saturday.
So the City Market is a great city institution, and we are all, every Saturday brings loads of people in, and it's a great community. Now, I have no idea what's going to be. I mean, it's going to be some in a form, in its form. I don't know about it moving.
Thanks, Russ.
I don't even think that issue is right now before City Council, because at this juncture, it is something for the future.
So, but are you saying that you support its continuance and as well as growth?
Absolutely. The City Market is a booming community institution. And one of the great aspects of our community is this resource. And particularly with the whole local, fresh, buy local, buy fresh produce, I mean, it's just growing and growing. The need and the demand is growing. So any decision that I make will be looking to the future and the sustainability of that institution in our city. Keeping the views on the building height proposal downtown.
The new ones or the old ones we're talking about?
And the new buildings. The design,
whether to change them or not.
Yeah, the design review board commission, whatever it is, says 70 feet with a
right.
setback at 45 feet.
Right, so you're talking about the new proposed ones.
Yeah. Are you going to support something like that?
Well, I need, what I'm doing is exploring all of these issues, so I'd love to hear what your concerns and your ideas are about that.
I don't want to have to walk down a dark canyon.
Right, well, I think in any good urban planning design, that is always not a good thing. Dark canyons are not good things. They are not thriving places. So dark canyons are something that I would like to avoid. What I like about downtown is the sunlight and the light. Looking to the future, we're going to have something that allows growth. But we can have growth in many areas of our community, not just downtown. And I think if we spread the growth throughout the city, there'll be a lot more opportunities for all the communities and all the neighborhoods of the community.
You know, Mr. Danielson is back in the game,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to put up a 9-story hotel on top of the Boxer Learning Building. And he's probably not going to be happy about this if he has to step it back.
I think he's already.
Well, we have to look too. What's sustainable for the future?
He's easily ruffled too, doesn't he?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I wish he'd stayed in California.
I think his hotel's already been approved.
The Boxer Building. It's not. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to take the Boxer Building too, I think.
Right. And there's going to be something lower looking on the wall and then on the back.
Setback.
But you can also turn Water Street into a canyon very quickly,
clearly,
too.
That's my main concern, is Water Street. So any decision that I make will have the perspective of what the future looks like. That is my perspective, is as a mother of two children and as a business owner in this community, how can we keep this moving forward?
Well, of course, the future is shaped by what we do in the present. So, you know, what do you want the future to end up looking like based on decisions that you make in the present?
So what guides my decisions are what I grew up here, so I have the sense of what the community means to me and what I want it to mean to my children. And that is green space, vibrancy, diversity, and opportunities here for all of the people that they grow up with. So those are the kinds of principles that will guide me, and it's going to guide me. It's my perspective of what I grew up with and what I want my kids to be raised.
You said you grew up here. What's sort of the short life history?
Okay. Well, I graduated from Western Alamo High School in 1990. And then I went to Piedmont Community College for many, many, many years. And then I graduated, went to UVA. And graduated from UVA, went to American University in Washington, and then worked at Legal Aid up in Fredericksburg and in Northern Virginia, and then moved back down here and started my own practice. And my mom lives here too, so we have still. She works at the hospital, and so she watches my children 3 days a week, and I get to.
What do you think about? What are some of the things you would do to address the traffic congestion and so forth? Like, are there any mass transit things that you would support or would like to see supported?
Right.
Because the more development we have, the more vehicles are going to be on the roads.
Especially county vehicles.
Yes. And that's why I like the CHART committee, the Regional Transportation Committee. That is, I think, a useful endeavor, and I really look forward to hearing what they have to say about what our regional transportation options are. But in the city, we need to be really focused on what we're going to do, because that's the only thing that we can control. And so, yes, sir?
I'm going to disagree with you on that. We have to work with the county, and we have to work with them now, because they're building all this stuff up there on 29 North, and we've got no plan, as far as I can tell, for handling all that traffic they're going to dump into the city. And what we need is not a 2-mile trolley line on Market Street. We need a light rail system that goes where the people live and takes them where they work. And that means it's got to go all the way to Rutgersville and have park and rides to bring people down here.
Right, and I believe that the CHART committee is going to be looking at that. I mean, although...
Let's hope so.
Clearly. Because one of the things I think are park and rides and that type of light rail, or at least bus rides, rapid transit on 29 to get to downtown would be very helpful. Or on Rio, even, would be exceptionally useful to getting cars off the road. Also maximizing, especially in our neighborhoods, the opportunity to stay in the neighborhood for their daily living things, for example, childcare or groceries. So bringing more retail into our community where we can walk or bike instead of...
Too much that's suburban here and has no retail, and they took our buses away.
Where do
from
you
live? Greensboro.
They took your buses.
We live right across from...
We don't have a bus service. We have Link. Right.
Yeah, they said the ridership was not sufficient.
Which I can believe.
Instead of exploring, reduced pickup, route times, and maybe some of the smaller van-type buses, they just cut it all out and said, okay, you want to go somewhere, you have to call in advance.
And actually, that's a very, if you've been, at council the past month, every comment period has had at least one or two comments specifically related to that in Johnson Village and in the Tinton Beach neighborhoods. So this is what I feel like what we should be doing with transit is looking to the future and saying, not that we don't have enough riders, but how can we get more riders? How can we make it much more interesting to ride? That means it's quicker. That means it's safer, cheap. It's all of those things. And it actually goes to places you want it to go.
There's the problem. And that's one reason why nobody rode the bus, because it went downtown. And everybody wanted to go to the university, so they had to take it downtown and change to another bus.
Yes.
And that turned a 15-minute walk, actually, well, a little more than that, but from where I live,
right.
it made it about an hour to get to work. And
you
it just
don't
wasn't
really
worth
live
it.
That far.
No, I just live right on the other side of the bridge, more
right,
or less.
Right.
So
that's just walking.
So I have to drive every day.
Yes.
And I have to pay outrageous parking fees. And I would take the bus if it ran to the university.
Next, we'll hear from Satyendra Huja, the former director of strategic planning in the Charlottesville Neighborhood Development Services Office.
Here's Mr. Huja, our next victim.
Well, the first question is about height in downtown. And I think when the last zoning ordinance was adopted 3 years back, they gave away the whole shop to developers. They made all the height by right. And thus, I think it needs to be reduced. Not reduced, but it needs to be in a way that it will be compatible with this building. You can't build nine-story buildings all through the city. It just won't fit in, I think, in my mind. And so I would, if I had my way, I would reduce the whole height requirement totally. And then have setbacks and all. They're thinking of those, some of those ideas. But, so that's my first question. I don't know, what is the second question?
Talk to us about ex-Mayor Cox's trolley car on Main Street.
The idea of trolley car is a good idea, except the question is who's going to fund it.
That's a good question.
Who's going to pay for it? So what I think is more is the rubber-based trolleys there are. They're just regular car, regular buses, basically. Mm-hmm. I think the better solution is to have an existing bus system every 15 minutes so that it's frequent, it's dependable, and most people like to ride it if you have a frequent system. Because right now it is 1 hour headway. Who's going to stand in hot weather or cold weather for an hour waiting for a bus?
That's for the free bus, right?
I'm talking about throughout the city.
Throughout the whole city? It's 1 hour everywhere?
Most places is 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really too much. In our neighborhood where I live, I think you live in the same neighborhood. You live in Greenbrier?
Yeah.
There is no bus system.
No. Right.
And if so, every time I want to go somewhere, I have to get in the car. And I would like to be able to take a bus.
Where do you live?
I live at, well, currently I'm in the Rose Hill neighborhood, but my home is in the Orangedale neighborhood. But usually it's between 25, 30 minutes at least. It is a long wait compared to other cities.
Yeah. But if it was every 15 minutes, you will most
likely be more likely to catch a bus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's not only good for traffic, mm-hmm. but it also gives the energy problems, pollution problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I meet a lot of interesting people on the bus when I ride bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I must say, I don't ride very often because there's no bus in my neighborhood. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I do like the idea of trolleys. Not a bad idea. Just a question of who's going to fund
it. Maybe in neighborhoods like ours that don't have much ridership, that you could have small vans that go through the neighborhood.
Or small buses.
Yeah.
Instead of those big ones,
yeah.
which... I, well, most of the time, I see don't have that many
empty.
People on.
They're empty.
The probably the major cost, other than the bus, is labor.
Yes.
The driver's probably the most expensive component on it.
That's true.
And so whether you take one person or you take 10, you're still paying the same amount.
That's true, except that when you have a bus that can accommodate 40, and you're only taking 2 or 3 or 5 people, it looks pretty... bad to me. It just means that a small bus will use better mileage also than the big bus.
Right, and be less noisy. Too.
Less noisy, less...
Well, and as I was ranting at Jennifer here about this, the problem, of course, even when we had the bus, was it didn't go where you needed to go.
That's
it
right.
took you downtown and dumped you where you had to transfer to another bus to get to the university.
There's another thing that you need to think about. We have been doing the same bus routes for the last 30 years. We need to think, change our mindset. Not everybody's going to downtown. You need to...
Exactly.
You need to do a survey of people where they want to go.
That's one of the problems with the trolley. People who promote it are saying, oh, people will live in lofts downtown and they'll all go to work at the university.
Most people are going to live where you're living.
Most of them.
And so I think what you need to do is to find out, if I was starting a business, I'd find out where my customers are, where they want to go, what do they want.
I know, but they live in Johnsonville, Orangedale, you know, all these areas.
Instead of just everybody, assuming that everybody is going to downtown. Now all the routes go through downtown.
Exactly. You know? And they're useless
for most
people.
If you're going to university, it takes you an hour and a half to get there. You can walk faster than that.
Exactly. You know? Yes.
So it doesn't make any sense. What are the other questions you guys have?
What are your thoughts about the rescue squad business? Have you thought about that at all?
Let me talk about that. First of all, I think that we probably should work with rescue squad itself in seeing how they can improve their service instead of starting our own service. If we need to supplement it, we are to supplement it. But I don't think we need to duplicate it.
What are your thoughts about working with the county? And I guess I'm most particularly interested in with Kevin Lynch going off the board, he seemed like one of the most strident ones willing to hold their feet to the fire and say, you know, listen, we're not going to give you this until you give us that.
You have to work cooperatively with the county in many issues, not just one issue, like housing. Many times we build housing, low-income housing, affordable housing, and non-city residents end up using it. And so the county ought to contribute in that venture. Same with our parks, for example. More than half of the, I think, users are county residents. And they ought to somehow join in paying for it, or maybe we should make one parks department. You know, for city and county to be merged. And I'm not opposed to that.
There goes our vote. If we were to merge with the county, that would be the end of a democratic stronghold.
I'm not talking about the whole city and county. I'm talking about the service.
Merging
services.
That's different.
Yeah, specific service.
We should have a better transit system the same way.
Yeah. I mean, there is a discussion going on right now on the transit authority for city and county, which I think is a good direction if they are willing to put up the money. But it would not be a good direction if they want the service and not put up the money.
But how do you hold their feet to the fire?
Well, don't have a little backbone. Mm-hmm. And, when I remember many years back, the county will come to city county meetings and they will hold on to their position and we finally will say, okay, well, let's resolve the issue and give in. You know, basically. And you have to just be stubborn sometimes, unfortunately.
That's what I was wondering about, whether you're willing to be stubborn sometimes. It seems like that's necessary in this
climate. Oh, yes, it is.
Climate.
If they know they can have you for free, why would they want to pay? It just comes.
Exactly.
So there are many areas of service where we could cooperate. I think housing comes to our mind. Proximity patient comes to our mind. Fire comes to our mind.
All right. As a former city planner, do you think that is going to be a problem working with city staff, or do you think it's purely good, purely difficult, or some combination?
I was an oddball of the staff anyway, always. I was in trouble. I didn't follow this bureaucracy very well. So I don't see any problems. I'm not looking for a job of planner. I already had that for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for a job of city council person who can set a policy so that and hold staff accountable. It's not just setting policy, but it's seeing that it gets carried out and there's some review and accountability for what we spend and not just spend. I get the feeling sometimes that we pass budgets, city council passes the budget, and then we see the staff next year, next budget time. You know, instead of asking, what have you done with last year's money, we're discussing how much more do you need. You know, if I was a bureaucrat, I would say, I need more. You know, somebody should be looking and see what I'm doing. Is it still needed? You know, we keep on adding things, and we've been doing things for 30 years. Maybe we solve these things we don't need. You know.
Mayor David Brown was the third candidate to speak with this group. He's a chiropractor who was first elected to city council in 2004.
Hi there. David. So you guys all know each other now, but I don't know all of you. I'll introduce myself. I'm David Brown.
Hi. Sally Sanford.
Yes, a while ago.
I'm Garth Bross. I belong to her.
Okay.
I'm me.
Leslie.
Leslie, good to see you. Kirk, please.
Talking to Mr. Fuji about the rescue squad deal and why doesn't it make sense to put staff with the rescue squad instead of with the fire department?
Well, you know, I that was my point of view on council. Kevin and I both had the point of view that we were moving too fast. I mean, we needed to work more closely with cars. One of the problems is that our fire department and our former fire chief, Julian, identified what they believe to be serious response times issues in the city. And to some degree, that makes sense. You know, we've got more traffic, we've got more people, the county's got more people. And at the same time, I think it's an environment where it's harder to get people to volunteer for anything. Mm-hmm. I think it's, everyone has a little less time, take longer to get places. And so, the dialogue, for whatever reasons, and there are some reasons, but it just didn't really work well between the city trying to say there's an issue here and cars responding and working together. I mean, there just seemed to be some stumbling blocks, you know, and I think you saw that somewhat in some of the rescue squad's comments, sort of saying, well, prove it to us there's a problem. We don't want to see the problem. Personally, I sort of felt like, well, if someone says there might be a problem, they should really look closely and identify whether there is or not. With that said, I thought we moved too fast. I think that what we have to do is make sure we move in such a way that we include the rescue squad, because that's a real asset in our community. It's one of the best rescue squads in the country, and it obviously makes it a lot less expensive for the city and the county to provide the service if we start doing it ourselves. And I personally, I really thought that for us just to start doing it ourselves and then have that fit in was a bad plan.
Well, I like having the volunteer structure mainly from the point of view that they currently now, the way it's set up, they go anywhere, anytime to anyone who needs you. And, you know, not everybody is going to be able to pay, you know, a $400 transport fee or something like that. And this is something where you don't want people hesitating to call because they think they can't afford it.
I agree completely. I think that's, you know, it's a quick answer to say, well, you know, we'll never, you know, we'll take anybody, but I think people feel like in the fee-for-service world, they may hesitate to call in the same way they currently avoid doctor visits because they feel like, I can't go. I don't have the money.
And, so then that right there is potentially targeting a whole population of people who don't have the financial resources, and whether it's for whatever reason at that particular time, they don't have it.
So where we are right now is that we're talking with the county about setting up a joint sort of task force, study commission to kind of look at, in an independent way, in a cooperative way, exactly what are the response times issues, where are they, and when are they, and what would be the best way for the city to put forward some resources in order to work with cars to solve that problem.
Should we rerun all the questions from before?
I wanted to ask you about in serving our youth in the community a lot better. Demeet is great. There's some talk about a YMCA being built in McIntyre, and I just wanted to know how you feel about that and
what's the status and where
things are going with that.
Well, there's been two thoughts. There have been two conversations. One conversation has been internal, just with our Parks and Rec study saying one thing you can do is to create a centralized facility, and that gives you an economy of scale. You can have fewer people doing more things. I've personally never been real attracted to that because I feel like for the kids that need activities the most, the ones who are really likely to be on soccer teams and to be in organized sports, but really need the neighborhood model, you know, having something that's in walking distance of kids is, I worry about losing that if we start moving towards a more centralized facility. Well, then what happened was some Y sort of came forward and wanting to know about, well, how about if we donate the land and they build a Y facility and everybody can win. Well, I'm frankly skeptical of that. I'm skeptical of that because I don't really see the Y's mission and the City Parks and Rec's mission kind of being the same thing. I think the Y's mission is going to be a lot more middle class leagues, you know, almost like the difference between the Y basketball league and the City basketball league. You know, if you have kids and they're playing these things, where the Y is much more affluent, much more white, and the City League is just all kids, and a lot of it is low income, a lot of it is African American. And, you know, it's a very different place, and there's some city kids that choose to play in the Y League, some county kids that come in and play in the City League, just depending on what they're looking for. But, so I have some skepticism. Also, I have some skepticism because the one place that the Y is interested in is McIntyre Parkland, and I sort of feel like, well, we've got another big park going in there, and I'm not really sure I want a big footprint building going there. So I enter this conversation with some skepticism. I kind of think we'd be better off, personally, kind of maintaining the neighborhood model with our rec centers and reinvesting in our pools. One of the things that I'm sorry we lost with our pools, now since I'm a school board member here, I can turn the tables, is I really liked it when we had all our kids learning to swim at Walker Elementary School. And I was bothered to see us get rid of that program. I think it's just, it's a great opportunity to feel like all the kids that go through our school system at least know the basics of how to swim. I mean, what a nice little skill we've taught. We don't do that.
Dave, on the affordable housing front, the county has zero public housing. Is that right? And with Kevin going off, and he's always been good at being willing to hold the county accountable and being vocal about, you know, we're not going to give them this unless they do something for us. How do we make them do more for affordable housing? Are you willing to draw a line in the sand at times when necessary?
You know, I mean, I think that's a big concern. I think Kevin has done a good job there. I think that, you know, right now their dynamic, which has been to cut their tax rate significantly,
yeah.
And, you know, you sort of wonder what are they going to invest
in. Seems like they're headed in the wrong direction.
And I'm concerned about, you know, whereas I'm supportive of us investing more in affordable housing, I don't want us to continue to be the only ones doing it.
If we build it, they will come.
Well, you know, the reality is, I mean, if we look at the waiting list for public housing in Charlottesville, for example, it's not just city families on there. There's families from regionally, you know. I mean, that's natural. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's, you know, if you find yourself poor, you're going to want to live in a city,
right?
You know, I mean, it just, life's
most
a lot
services
easier.
Are, right?
I mean, how can you live without a car in North Garden?
Right.
You can't very easily. So, you know, I think the one thing we need to do is to get a joint affordable housing committee, so we're talking about the problems together, and hopefully by doing that, putting some indirect pressure on them to do things together. Secondly, I sort of feel pretty strongly, you know, since this number of meetings, that, you know, we should not embark on significant new programs without getting the county to come on board with us. You know, we need to do this together. You know, we have a high poverty rate, and the county's attitudes can be, oh, you guys can do that for us and help us? Go ahead. You know, and I think we have to be careful with that.
Right.
At the same time, I think we need to look carefully because if you're low income and you live in Charlottesville, the housing stock of affordable rental housing in Charlottesville has shrunk. You know,
yep.
So it's not like we can't go ahead and make some investment. You know, we need to at least be getting back what we've had. You know, because, you know, it's very hard. The person has to move and stay in the city, and you know, and the cost of commuting is high. I mean, so if you have a car, if you're going to end up half an hour away.
Holly Edwards works as Program Director for the Public Housing Association of Residents, or FAR. She came to Charlottesville to attend the University of Virginia School of Nursing.
And I'm Holly Edwards. Thank you for welcoming me to the table. Do I I have any specific questions?
I'd like to hear about you. I haven't, you're the one person who's come through here I don't really know much about.
Okay.
Tell me about your background.
I came here because I had a job at the hospital. At the time, nursing, the hospital had an appointment scholarship, and for every year nurses that they were, I had to work at the hospital for a year. And so I came here in 1991 with every intention of staying for a new year, and that was 16 years ago. And in many ways, nursing wasn't a career change. I think the career changed me, and that's when I became an advocate for a patient in the hospital. And as I became involved within the community, my advocacy role not only included helping people navigate the healthcare system, but I learned that the same people that needed help with navigating the healthcare system also needed help in navigating their housing. They also needed help in navigating the education of getting the children through the school system. And so I started learning more about how many of the variables in people's lives are disconnected to the other. And with my outreach within the public housing neighborhoods over at West Haven, I learned how poverty has been such an integral issue in just having people overcome different barriers in their life. And so I decided to run for council because I decided it was time for me to move up to the next level of public service. And I felt that being on council would allow me not only an opportunity to learn more about how those policies are set that affect the quality of life of people, but to be a part of that decision-making process as well. And also, I've spent a lot of time encouraging people to go back to school, encouraging people to take jobs that they really are struggling with, and encouraging people to really take a risk to learn something new, to do something new. And now it's time for me to do the same thing. And that's how I got here.
That's a really important part of why you stayed here.
And that's true, because I came here, I didn't know anybody. And so now I have a husband, a house, a dog, and two sets of twins.
Two sets of twins. Whoa. How old are they?
The older girls are 12, and they're sixth graders here at Walker. And one is the president of the Student Council Association, so I think I'm trying to catch up with her in terms of really making a commitment to public office. And the babies are a year and a half, and actually,
wow,
the babies are the ones that kind of dictate what happens in their lives.
You still work for the hospital?
Since the babies were born, I didn't go back to the hospital. I now work for FAR, which is the Public Housing Association of Residents. And I'm the program coordinator, and I'm also the director of the FAR Leadership Program. So I've spent the past few months developing, after I had a chance to develop the curriculum for the public housing residents to go through so they can meet their neighbors and organize around issues and bring about the changes that they want within their community. And so in many ways, the things that I've been teaching the interns, I'm now practicing in my journey to city council.
Are there any things that you've seen that you think that the city could be doing better vis-a-vis the public housing folks?
I think right now the reality is that public housing is the only affordable housing, and that public housing will soon be on the verge of development. This is going to have to happen because our public housing sites are also some of our oldest sites. And so I think the city can start looking now at what development's going to mean and what that design is going to look like.
I think the nasty word for that is gentrification.
Is that what you're talking about, is gentrification, or are you talking about just redeveloping the public housing into a different form, or sort of both?
Addressing it so that, and that's why I want to have the conversation now, so that, because I don't want the gentrification and the
urban renewal decisions that were made back during the Benninger Hill transition to ever happen that way again. And part of making sure that it doesn't happen the way that happened then is to be open with what the ideas are and to be open with the vision and to also have the people that live within the community to be a part of that vision. And I think that's why the FAR internship program is important, because the residents are now learning how to understand what issues are and learning to go to city council meetings and to have neighborhood association meetings to get more involved in all aspects of how those decisions are made.
Linda Seaman has been active in city government ever since she moved to the area with her family in 1974. She's a former member and chair of the school board and is currently involved with the Impact Group. That stands for Interfaith Movement Promoting Action by Congregations Together.
Well, if we're following what we've done at the other tables, I guess I should spend a couple minutes just telling you who I am and how I got here, and then I'd be happy to entertain your questions. We came here 33 years ago, 1974. And it was during the oil embargo. And we looked at property in the county, and we looked at property in the city, and we looked at the gas lines, and we said, we're going to live in the city. It was a pretty simple decision. We lived in the same house ever since, because probably I couldn't clean out the attic in the rest of my lifetime. We have two children. Our oldest daughter was in kindergarten when we moved here. And as we enrolled her, I asked about when PTA meetings or PTO meetings were, and they said, oh, we don't have that. We don't need parents in school. And so I started a PTO at Greenbrier. And when our daughter got here to Walker, I said, okay, when does the PTO meet? And there was none here, so we started another one. When she got to CHS, we got the same answer. And so I started a third PTA, with PTO, really. I've been on a number of city committees, both in the school system and in the city government. And I guess for all of those sins, I got the privilege of serving on the school board for 9 years and was chairman of the board and also served on the KTEC board and was chairman of that. And I have a real affair of the heart with KTEC, I will let you know. Most recently, I was employed as executive director of the Charlottesville Area School Business Alliance, which was a collaborative organization between businesses in this region and schools. And we serve 4 counties in the city of Charlottesville. So with that, I open it up.
Do you have any ideas as to how to increase alternative transportation options?
Yeah, there's some interesting ones. And I have this feeling deep inside that we're going to have more available to us within 10 years, certainly. But my position on the Meadow Creek Parkway is if it gets built or when it gets built, and should that be within my lifetime, I think that it should have... I would say that it ought to be HOV lanes during peak hours, HOV lanes in both directions, so that we can start breaking down the single occupant to per car. And also
Is that just on Meadow Creek Parkway?
I think we can start there because it's a new road. I would like to see it on other roads. And we might have to start talking about that in areas such as Old Lisbon Road. Because the traffic pressures in that part of the city are very great now. They're only going to be greater when the Granger property and Biscuit Run are developed. That's another possibility.
Coming down besides Biscuit Run?
The Granger property is another large property owned by Corin Capture. So I think we have to look at those things. I mean, everybody talks about bikes, and I love bikes, and I'd like to see bike trails connected,
safe
ones.
They're not safe places to
no.
ride. I mean, those so-called bike lanes
are
fragmented.
Not safe. Yeah.
You know, they'll go for several hundred feet, and then that's the end of it.
This is the most dangerous place
and
to ride a bike.
And you're sitting out in traffic, mm-hmm. and there's just not this. Hey, you'd be taking your life in your hands to ride on 29 North. Forget it.
Yeah. The best I can say is, at least on city streets, one of the real issues is we don't have easements and enough lanes, and we'd be in a lot of people's front yards if we were to add that much more pavement. And a lot of neighborhoods wouldn't be excited about that. But I think we have to continue to work to have good commuter bike routes developed so that you can commute by bike. And
what about the city bus system? Are there some things you can think of to improve that?
Well, at this point in time, the city is subsidizing the buses to the tune of about 90% of its cost, right, Kevin? About 90%?
City, state, and federal together.
Yeah, okay.
And we put about a third, which is $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Get about that much.
Well, let's make them free. Let's go the extra 10%. Make them free.
$1.5 million.
I would say that we need to have bus service throughout the city. Where you live and I live, there's no buses.
Yes, there's no
in fact, there's four of us here, and I'm not sure where you live, but...
it's not very good, right?
No.
Yeah,
okay.
It shuts down too early.
Okay, so we're not getting... We don't have buses at all.
And they don't... If you have them, they don't go where you need to go. They take you downtown and dump you, and you have to change to another bus.
And I would love to see us have a trunk line, a major trunk line coming right up, a bus trunk that comes from downtown all the way up 29, and then you feed into the trunk line. We also have to shorten headways.
Light rail.
Well, light rail worries me, and I'll tell you why it worries me. If it's done on the railroad and it's coming, and you have commuter lines going into D.C., you're going to have development the whole way. And development will follow that kind of
thing. He was thinking about Buckersville.
Okay.
No,
Are you thinking about something like the streetcar? Is that what you're really thinking about?
Not quite, but something akin to that. We need rail transit north on 29, probably as far as Ruckersville, because that's all going to be developed in 5 or 10 years. We at least need to get the plans in place and get the land set aside for the right of way now. Because otherwise it's going to be all built up and not be any place to put it.
Yeah.
But that's where the growth is, and that's what's choking Emmett Street and 29 North, is all this traffic's coming down here and going out in the afternoon. And you've got things like the GE Research Park, which I understand is going to have several thousand cars.
The UVA Research Park.
When it reaches its peak, I think they're planning to employ something like 14,000 people out there.
I think that's their hope. That's been developing very slowly.
But then you've got GE Fanya.
That has actually gotten smaller by a third.
But what
you've got is NJIC, which is really growing up.
Yes, that's going to double.
And NJIC is the
they've
big...
They've got a new building that's going to be built right next door to it, subject for completion, I believe, in around 2010, something like that.
With 800 more
employees. And they're going to have...
That's the big growth generator out that
but
way.
But that's right almost across the road from the research park.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know,
and then there's GE just a little bit further up the road, and then there's the airport,
which has no transit whatsoever except
the and Forest Lakes, and then that big development behind where Target is.
North Point.
So that's all going to generate people who will all come into town.
Or they're going to stay out there, and town will, go to it. Either way.
You have to have public transit where there is a growth like that.
Right.
And we haven't got it, and it's something that we need to take into account now.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's not built now, the plans have got to be laid for 5 years or something.
And that does mean a city-county collaboration.
Sure. Well, all of transportation issues have to be collaborative. I'm very hopeful that we can get to the point of having a transportation district that includes not only the city of Charlottesville, but Albemarle County and Greene County. I would like to see us go to Fluvanna, which has even less. At least Greene County has a little bit of transit. Fluvanna doesn't have any. And,
yeah, the closest representative for what you're talking about is John.
John is the closest representative. Yeah. And this has got to be a regional collaboration because we don't own all of it. We own a piece of it. Everybody else owns a piece of it. And we truly have to work together, as well as the university being part of that. because the university has to be a player in that whole transit mix.
Yes, the biggest employer in the area.
Now, speaking of that in terms of numbers of vehicles on the roads, I think that it's time for the public sector to prevail upon the private sector, namely employers, to start van pools. Now, the university could, as it expands almost internally, wants to keep about the same footprint, but when you look at the medical center expansion and they're tearing down that one garage and putting up yet another hospital there, that just the number of vehicles coming in there is going to be ever, ever greater.
More vehicles, less parking.
And it would be in their economic interest to buy vans, do what the Pentagon does, which is get somebody to drive it. They collect some money from it. They get priority parking, and it gets cars off the road. It's time for the university to have to step up for that. It truly is tough. State Farm runs van pools. There's no reason why UVA can't. They're the largest employer around here.
After this round of conversations was over, the five candidates then answered a series of questions from the audience as part of another panel discussion. Charlottesville Tomorrow brings you that audio in another podcast. The candidates will speak at several other public events before a nominating caucus on June 2nd that will be held at 12:30 p.m. at the Charlottesville Performing Arts Center. Stay tuned to Charlottesville Tomorrow to see how this round of the election unfolds. Our election watch page has all the important details at civiltomorrow.org.